Good morning, guys. How's it going? My name is Matt, and I'm filling in for Paul today. As you can see, Paul's right over there if you need to talk to him. Nobody panic, all right? Everybody stay where you're at. Okay. We're doing a series, and that series is Attitude is Everything, and we're just talking about cultivating an attitude of joy. And so I started thinking about the topic, and this single solitary thought hit me, which is this: isn't it funny how people and places rub off on you? Okay, so here's what I mean by that. If you have a really good friend and they have a certain way of talking, if you're around them long enough, you find yourself talking the same way that they talk or maybe using some of the mannerisms that they use. This is definitely true if you are not born in the state of Texas. Just by show of hands, who's not born in the state of Texas? You're born somewhere else. So you guys have a lot more courage than the first. Like nobody wanted to raise their hand. I'm like, I'm not going to pick on you, okay? But I want to talk to you a little bit, because when you go back home, isn't this true? You come back and you bring some of those sayings and ways of speaking, like an accent maybe, or a euphemism of some sort with you. I don't know if that's true of you guys, or maybe when you go back home, you start saying y'all and, you know, fixin' to and all these kind of things that you hear. Somebody thought that was good. You take that back with you and they're like, what's up with your accent? But it just kind of proves the point, like the spaces and the places that you go, like sometimes rub off on you a little bit. And so I asked some of my friends who were not born in Texas if this happens to them, and if so, what are some of the things that they come back with? And one of my friends, she's from Iowa, and so I said, what are some of the things that you find yourself saying when you come back? Now, I don't know that this has any sort of translation here in Texas. I'm just going to go out on a limb. But walking the beans, Iowa's a rural, you know, community, and so farming is a big part of that. Walking the beans just means you're pulling weeds when you're walking amongst the beans, okay? I'm telling you, there's like no way to describe it. Scoop the loop makes me think of like Fruit Loops or something like that, but I was assured scoop the loop simply means you're cruising, okay? You get in your car and you scoop the loop. I don't know what kind of scooping's going on when you're in the car, but whatever, so scoop the loop. I says, he says, she says, we says. Apparently, that's just when someone is talking and you're conveying information that somebody else said, instead of just going, they said this. You have to interject, he says, I says, we says, she says, they says. Okay, and so that's an Iowa deal. Wash, now that's something, I don't know, you're probably familiar with that, but that's what you do with your dishes. It's what you do with your clothes, you wash it. And if you go to Iowa and come back, you may come back with this saying, and it's just because you spent a lot of time around the people there. And another one of my friends, he's from Mississippi. Okay. All right. You're excited about Mississippi. It's good. All right. So he's from Mississippi, and I love some of the Mississippi sayings. Y'all need anything, just holler. So I guess once you say that, if somebody's in the other room and they're like, you know, you just know, oh, they need something. Okay. From Mississippi, bless her heart. That's kind of a Southern thing. And really what bless her heart means is I really want to talk about this person, but I got to say something nice up front, right? You know it. You know it. You know it's true. And then your mom and them, that's like, it's what you say to someone. You're like, hey, tell hello. Instead of saying, say hello to your family, you just say, tell your mom and them I said hello, right? That's mom and them. It's a thing, just family, all right? This buggy. If you're from Mississippi and you go shopping, once you get the stuff off the shelf, it goes in your buggy. It doesn't go in your shopping cart. It goes, just saying, okay? This is one of my favorites. John Mark said, you can't be an older person in Mississippi and not say this at some point. I'm blind in one eye, can't see out the other. You know, that's just, it's really funny, colloquialism. Now, California, one of my friends is from California, and I asked her, like, what are some of the sayings that you go and you come back with? Here's the funny thing about California. Mississippi, it's like this really long phrase that's kind of drawn out. California, you got like one word. So it's like, man, that's sick. Now, don't be alarmed. That doesn't mean someone's ill or, you know, that they need help. They're just, it's just awesome. Man, that's sick. That's awesome. These are all just one words. In California, stoked. You've probably heard that before. We've adopted that into our culture. It just means you're excited about something. I'm stoked, right? Okay. I have to say, that's probably not accurate for people from California that would say it that way. But gnarly, the thing I like about gnarly is that it's versatile. So gnarly can mean that's really awesome and cool, or it can mean that's really disgusting. I can't believe that happened. It's gnarly, you know, that happened to you. Now, I'm from Texas. And okay, you can get accepted. It's fine if you want to applaud for Texas. I like it here. I'm still here. So Texas has its own way of saying things. This is something that you say in Texas when you're about to do something. You just say, I'm fixing to do something. I'm fixing to get grocery. I'm fixing to eat. You're not really fixing to do anything. You're just going to do the thing, right? You're fixing to. Bigger than Dallas, what you need to know about Texas is everything in Texas is huge. But if you say bigger than Dallas, watch out. Like, this is whatever it is, it's gonna be big. This is a strange one to me, like all get out. And what's strange about it is I do find myself saying it. I say it. What it means is whatever it is you're about to do, multiply that times 10, all right? It's like all get out. Like, I'm about to eat this barbecue, like all get out, you know? Like, just multiply it times 10. And then lastly, this ain't my first rodeo is something that you say a lot in Texas. And all that simply means is I'm not a beginner, all right? I've been around the block a couple of times. This ain't my first rodeo. So, you know, it's interesting to me that when you spend time around people, whether it's like going back home to a different state or they hear all the Texas sayings that you're bringing home, when you spend time around people, how those sayings rub off on you a little bit, how you kind of soak in your environment. And in general, I really believe that's true of human beings. I think our brains are like sponges. Like, we soak up the environments that we're in, whether that's like a saying or a colloquialism, or if it is an attitude. And we're in the middle of talking about like attitudes, but you know this to be true. If you're around someone who has a really negative attitude, it sometimes rubs off on you. If you're around someone who can only see what's wrong with the world versus some of the things that are right with the world, you can't help but at times start picking it apart. You go, oh, but this is messed up, and that's messed up, and oh, can you believe that this person did that? You pick it up. You're a sponge. You soak in the environment that you're in. Attitudes happen that way. And this is a really big problem. It's a really big problem because the world that we're currently living in right now is toxic. The opinions, the way that we speak to each other, what we say, how we say certain things, it's toxic. And if we're living in a toxic atmosphere, in a toxic environment, we have a tendency to soak that up as well. And so that's exactly why we decided to do a series on attitude and address, take it from Philippians a little bit. And each week we've come away with something different. And the first week, we determined joy is not determined by circumstances, but by choice. You have to choose a great attitude. It just didn't happen by accident. Chapter 2, joy is not found in catering to ourselves. Joy is found in helping others. Joy is about getting outside of yourself and not focusing so much on yourself. Chapter 3, we learned that joy does not come through a religion. Joy comes through a relationship with Jesus. So it's not about like the strict traditional understanding of God, but it's more about an experience that you have with God, with Christ, that alters your attitude and your perspective. And then chapter 4, here's what I want you to understand. I want you to understand that none of those things that we've talked about, like Paul alluded to, it's a choice. None of those things happen by accident. I will say that sometimes accidentally we do soak up an environment and attitudes that maybe we wish we didn't have towards things. That can happen easily. But a great attitude takes real work. It takes intentionality. But I do believe that the places where you spend time, the places where you dwell, will have an effect on your attitude. So what you dwell on begins to dwell in you. And like I've already said, that is a huge problem. The environment that we're living in, the culture that we're living in, the attitudes that we're around on a day-to-day basis will challenge that. Things like an us versus them culture, where we make certain people enemies, and the people that agree with us are right, of course, but the people that disagree with us are our enemies. It's this us versus them culture. It's a focus on winning arguments versus coming to an understanding of some sort. It's also a culture of relentless distraction. our phones with notifications, people liking things on social media, text, news alerts. I don't know if you get those, but like things will just, you know, you'll hear a little bing and you have to like check your phone real quick. We live like in a culture of distraction. And we soak that up. It's hard for us to focus on one thing or the other. We live in an atmosphere of destructive criticism, where all we're doing is bringing awareness to the things that are wrong with the world and pointing out who's responsible for those things. We tear people apart, and then we offer absolutely no solution to the problem, nor do we do anything about it. That's the atmosphere that we're soaking in, that we're soaking up. And then lastly, we live in a culture of blame, where it's always somebody else's fault for the way that things are right now. It's always somebody else's fault for the way that I feel. It's always somebody else's fault for things that are happening without taking personal responsibility. You see, if we're not intentional about our attitude, if we don't choose to dwell in the right places, those sort of arguments will begin to dwell in us. And this happens simultaneously. It happens unconsciously. But what I'm telling you is you have to be intentional about working towards a great attitude, because it doesn't happen by accident. And all of that has to do where your heart and your mind dwell. Your heart, meaning your desire, what you want, and your mind, meaning your intellect and what you spend time reading and taking in. Where you dwell is important, because what you dwell on begins to dwell in you. And I think the Apostle Paul understood this well. You know, we've talked about this in previous weeks, but when Paul wrote Philippians, he was in jail. And Paul had seen a lot of hard times. There's a lot of things that he had experienced. Paul has been attacked on a regular basis, doing the right thing. It's not for doing bad things. It's for preaching the gospel and telling people about Jesus Christ. There was one time when he was healing a man who was crippled. And when he did so, the crowd kind of responded in such a way that they wanted to call him a god. And he was kind of like, okay, well, it's not about me. Like, this is about, let's focus on God. And then somebody else got in the mix and they started stirring up the crowd. Well, the crowd turned on Paul. They threw rocks at him till he went unconscious and dragged his body outside of the gates for dead. And he survived. That's something that Paul endured, not doing the wrong thing or doing something hateful. He was doing the right thing. He was casting out demons from a slave, this slave girl, and people got upset because she was telling the future, and that helped them in gambling and different things. And so people attacked Paul for that. They imprisoned him, and God released him. There was a time when Paul was bringing Gentile believers, which just means people who weren't Jewish, into the temple. And when he did that, the religious people got in an uproar. There was a riot, and they turned against him, and they threw him in prison again. What I'm trying to tell you is Paul again and again was doing the right thing and then getting thrown under the bus for it. They even said in Acts 24:5, "For we have found this man a plague." They called him a sickness. "One who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world, and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. No good deed goes unpunished." Paul constantly was doing what God told him to do and was getting hurt for it. And currently, the letter that we're about to read, Paul is writing it from prison. He is currently in chains when he's writing the Philippians. So if there is anybody who could get their mindset straight without soaking in the atmosphere, it was Paul, because the things that he's going to tell the Philippian church to focus on, it's going to get them outside of themselves, and they're going to be able to at least focus on an attitude of joy. And we could easily go, "Paul, what about your environment? Don't you realize you're falsely in prison? What about your rights, Paul? You're a Roman citizen and they're treating you this way. What about what you deserve?" But Paul doesn't spend any amount of time focused on what he deserves. He focuses in on how he can reflect Christ in his imprisonment. And he gives us just a few tips on how to do that. as we begin chapter 4 of Philippians, Paul addresses Euodia and Syntyche, and that's the last time I'm going to try to pronounce those names. It's not easy, okay? But these are two women who'd been in an argument, they'd been in conflict, and they'd been fighting each other, and it becomes such a problem that Paul, in his letter, writes to it, and he says, please reconcile, please make peace with one another. And then he encourages the rest of the church, help them make peace with one another, because they were in conflict and it was destroying the church. So from the very get-go, Paul addresses a conflict, which is good for us, because even though Paul is addressing the church in Philippi, he's really also talking to us at the same time. That if there's a conflict, if there's something that we're embroiled in, whether it's an opinion or a political view or whatever, that we would make peace with one another even though we disagree. Paul says, please reconcile with one another. And then he goes on and he begins to tell us how even though our circumstances may be dire, you can still focus on Christ and let him transform your attitude. In Philippians 4:4, he says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Twice. He's like, rejoice. And no, seriously, rejoice. Have joy. He's in prison and he's telling them, I want you to have joy. He says, again, I say rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord, what God is doing. Think about what he's doing in and through me. Even though I'm in prison, I'm able to witness to people that are next to me. Think about how this is an encouragement to the church worldwide, that even though I'm suffering, I still preach the gospel. In the Lord, I'm going to rejoice. And then he said, let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. That word gentle spirit, it carries with it the connotation to be quick to forgive. So I'm going to press the pause button real quick, and I'm going to ask you a question. How quick are you to forgive? Because if you are not quick to forgive, that may reflect something about your attitude. It may reflect something about where you are dwelling. And Paul says, let your gentle spirit be known to all men. Like, I want people to see how quickly you forgive people, how eager you are to forgive people. And why? Because the Lord is near. This to me says something very specific about where you dwell, because if you realize that God is near and you make him your dwelling place, not what is happening to you, not what is being said to you or how you are treated, but if you dwell with God and not what you deserve, he will change your attitude and give you an attitude of joy. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. And now he turns a corner a little bit. He's going to show us how we can begin to like adjust our attitude just like he is with the Philippians. He says, here's one way to, like, the Lord is near, but be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. He goes, if you're going to change your attitude, it starts with dwelling with God in prayer. That you're lifting things up to him, you're lifting people up to him, that you're carving out time where you start your day and your attitude by dwelling in God's presence and let him fix your attitude. And I don't know about you, but sometimes when I pray, I'm in the car because that's where nobody will bug me. Nobody will say, now I look crazy because I'm talking to myself. So maybe I'm talking to myself, maybe I'm praying. I don't know if you see me out in public like that. But when I drive, I like to pray. And sometimes I get caught up in this idea of like, well, what are the things that I need today? Well, I've got a meeting, that God be with me in that meeting. And here's my schedule, God, I need you to bless this. And God, I want you to bless this and this and this. And I've come to a realization that if I'm going to change my attitude, it can't start with God blessing the things that I give him. It has to start with me putting those things behind me and go, God, what is your agenda today? Where do you want me? Who do you want me to talk to? Who can I forgive? God, you tell me what my schedule is today. Now, that's not to say that he doesn't care about your schedule and you can't pray for what's going on. I think you should. I think you should pray for the things that are going on in your schedule today. But it's a shift in thinking from God bless this to God, I want to be a blessing to others. And when you carve out time with God in the morning, one of the things that you do is you're aligning your will to his. And that's what I just described. God, what do you want me to do? And the other thing that you're doing is you're creating this space around you where you won't be interrupted. Nobody's going to ask anything of you. And it gives you space from all the things that beg your attention. You start the day off right by praying. It says, when you pray, when you lift things up, and when you give it over to God, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. He said, you pray to me, you make it about me and not you, and you give it up to me, there will be a peace that you have. If you realize life is not about you, that it's about him, and you hand it over to God, and you go, I want to be a blessing, that there will be a peace that transcends all understanding, and that peace will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. The word guard is like a military guard around your thoughts and your desire. It's like if you want your attitude to change, start by praying. And then Paul's going to give us like a list of things. It's like six things that he wants us to focus on. He's like, you know, I want you to pray. I want you to give it over to me. That's how you set your trajectory for the day. But then there are other things that I really want you to focus on. It's like a regimen. It's like a workout. It's a thought and desire kind of workout where he's like, I want you to focus on these things. And he starts it by saying, finally. So he's wrapping up the book of Philippians. He's like, everything that I've said before, true, right? All about the gospel, all about choosing your attitude, all of those things, it's true. But finally, brothers, he's using like familial language there, whatever. And I love this. You're going to see whatever over and over and over again. It's like anything that fits in this category, whatever is true. I want you to focus on those things. Whatever is true. And it's not what is true about my opinion. Okay? It's not true about what I think. It's true about God. It's true about the world that he created. And it's true about the people that he came to save. It's everybody. What is true about God? What is true about others? And what is true about the world that he came to save, that he loved so much, that he was willing to die for? What is true about them? Not the latest gossip, not the latest news that I just heard. What is true in the eyes of God about the people he came to save? I love Romans 3:4 says this, let God be found true, though every man be found a liar. He's like, even if every man on the planet was lying, let God be found true, because that's exactly the way that it is. And that sort of truth is found in God's word. If you pray and you read his word, he will tell you what is true about him. He will tell you what is true about his heart. God's truth is there. Now, something can be true and be manipulative. You can say something that's absolutely true, but it has kind of a slant to it. And so this sort of truth is something that is verifiable and not self-serving. It's honesty and having a good conscience. It not only has to do with God and the world around it, but it has to do with information that you pass on or things that you say. Is it true? Are you focused on the things that are true? And is truth then dwelling in you? Because what dwells in you then comes out. Whatever is true, whatever is in that bucket, whatever is noble or honorable, whatever is honorable. That has to do with things that are of respect and dignity. It's a higher value, not trivial or sensational, something that holds the quality of honor or respect. Now, just like when we start talking about things that are true and things that have respect, we immediately start thinking of other people that need to apply this to their life. Yes, whatever is true. Let me show them in the Bible the things that are true. This is true, right? So I'm right, you're wrong. You see how that like is easy to turn around back to your opinion and proving your point? And respect is the same way. We all want respect, but do we give respect to people? Does respect dwell in you? Do you show honor to other people? And if you do not, why do you expect honor in return? And when it comes to focusing on God, how do you honor him? How do you respect God? When we begin to focus on things that are sensational or trivial, our mindset and our attitude can change. and be focused on those things. What is honorable? What is respectful? And does it dwell in you? And then whatever is right. Whatever is right. That has to do with justice. It has to do with, do you treat people fairly? But first of all, you really have to evaluate your soul on that. Like, where is my heart in treating other people fairly? Not how do people treat me and how have I been mistreated, but how am I treating others? Knowing that you're going to be mistreated and other people won't return the favor, but are you showing justice to people? And is it justice for all or just for some? Whatever is right. Proverbs 10 through 18 in Proverbs talks about the wicked man and the righteous man. And over again, the wicked man is someone who treats other people poorly. It's lying in wait for blood. It's cheating people. It's adultery. It's all these bad things. And the righteous man is about love, peace, and joy. Which one are you? Sorry, let me go back. Yes, do that when we get to it. Okay, all right. So whatever is right, whatever is pure is the next one. Where do you spend your time? What are you looking at? Pure has the idea of moral purity and cleanliness. Like, are you dwelling in places that are pure and that feed you? And is that something that comes out of you as well? It's personal purity. And we have to make sure that when it comes to personal purity, again, we don't show the Bible to other people like, well, I'm doing this, you need to do this, but that it has the sense of like a Matthew 7:3 type of situation. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own? Are you spending time removing the log out of your eye? Are you quick to judge others? And then lastly, it says, whatever is lovely. And this is one of my favorite ones, because it has to do with beauty. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but God is a God of beauty. Like, he creates beautiful things. And there was a commentator that said of the word lovely or beauty, that this could be talking about what Mother Teresa did and her acts and her kindness, or it could be talking about a Matisse painting. Like, that's awesome. Like, if there's anything, whatever is beautiful, like, focus on the things that are beautiful. I mean, it could be like looking at old footage of Michael Jordan, like slam dunking the basketball. Like, that's beautiful. I don't know if you ever watched that, but man, guys, am I right? Like, I just need a little feedback. It's like when he jumps and he defies gravity and he slams it and you go, how is that even, that's beautiful. Like, that's a beautiful thing. That's the only time guys use the word beautiful is when a play like on the field happens, but it's true. Of all of those things, but God is a God of beauty. Here's something else, kindness is beautiful. Kindness is beautiful. When you're kind to someone, that is beautiful. Psalm 133 says, behold how good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. How good and pleasant, how good and beautiful is it to dwell in unity? And does beauty dwell in you? Do people want to be around you because you're like, man, there's something about that person? Does that attitude dwell in you? But those are some things we can focus on. And then lastly, he says, whatever is good, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there's any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. It's like, you know, if I've missed anything, if there's anything excellent, if there's anything, it says, of good report, if there's anything that you look at and you go, that's just amazing that happened, dwell on these things. The cool thing about this list that I found out later is this a list that we could easily apply to God and the things that he wants us to do. It's easy to apply it to those things. But at the same time, Paul was using a list of Greek virtues that people who are outside of the faith could also look at and they could go, no, that's the way to live, right? So even if you're not a believer, you can look at these things and you go, this is the way that I should live. But if you are a believer, you can look at all of these things and you say, that's the way Jesus lived. He was true. He was noble. He was right. He was pure. He was lovely. And everything he did was of good report. It's the way to live. Are those things dwelling in you? Because that's the last thing that Paul says, dwell on these things or meditate on these things. Think about these things. It has to do with calculating or weighing. Like, does my life look like this list? Are these the things that are shaping me? Or is it my culture? Is it the attitudes that I just soak in? Are these the things that are shaping me? It says, dwell on these things. Let these things define you. It reminds me a little bit of like when I go to Smoky Mo's Barbecue. I don't know if you, this is not, like I don't get money for this. I'm just saying, or free Smoky Mo's Barbecue. But when I go to Smoky Mo's Barbecue and I sit down and I eat barbecue, I know you're thinking, no, that's not that great. I like this place. I know, whatever. When I sit down with Smoky Mo's Barbecue, I'm like, this is beautiful. Like, this is pure. It's lovely. You know, I don't quote scripture, but I'm just into my mouth. And so I'm eating barbecue, and I'm just like, oh, this is delicious. And it's got, like, cream corn and stuff. And, oh, man, this is so good. And I eat it, and then I don't know about you, but when I eat barbecue, I can't drink water. I have to have a Dr. Pepper. And so, like, I have this big fatty Dr. Pepper and barbecue, and I have to, you know, run 20 miles afterwards because, you know, to get rid of all it. But I drink, like, Dr. Pepper, and I leave Smoky Mo's, and I'll come back to the office or someplace, and someone will go, did you go to Smoky Mo's barbecue? Like, you can smell it. Like, it emanates, right, off of me. Here's the thing about an attitude, a great attitude, is that people can smell it on you. Like, it's either a foul odor or it's a pleasing aroma. People know before they even have an extended conversation with you sometimes if you're critical. People know if you're angry. People know if you don't like them. What is the aroma? What is the smell that comes off of you? Interesting fact, the word attitude, since we're talking about attitude, the word attitude is an artistic term. It has to do with the posture of a sculpture. So like if you have a human sculpture that you're sculpting, right? Think of David, right? David who has the sling like over his shoulder and his eyes are like fixed on something. His hands, like imagine him with track pants on because we're in church. But like he's got the sling over his shoulder and he's steely gaze and right, the position that David is in, that's his posture, that's his attitude. That's where the term comes from. It's the posture or position of a statue. So the question is, what is your posture towards the world around you? What is your position towards them? Because if it's negative, if it's critical, if it's angry, people can smell that on you. But if it is joyful, listen, joy is more contagious than all of that other stuff. I don't know if you've ever spent a lot of time around somebody who is super joyful, but you're like, oh my gosh, what is up with this person? Like, they're amazing. Like, I've had friends before where I go to their house and like they serve me meals and they're super encouraging and they just say all these really nice things about me. And I'm like, I'm coming here all the time. Like, every night for dinner, this is where I'm coming. But joy is just as contagious as soaking in like a negative atmosphere as well. But it's gonna take work and it's gonna take focus. And it doesn't happen by accident. And it happens by dwelling in the right places, because what you dwell on will come to dwell inside of you. If it's anger, anger will come out. If it's hate, hate will come out. If it's love and it's joy, those things will come out too. If it's peace, you will exude peace. What is your posture towards the world around you? Here's a couple of things just to take with you to kind of get us moving in the right direction with our attitude. And the first thing is this, pray often, pray often. Man, because we're inundated on a regular basis, whether it's with news or opinions or people, you're gonna have to do this often. Do it in the morning, do it in the car ride, do it when you get home. Doesn't have to be 20 minutes or 30 minutes, it could be 5 seconds, it could be 5 minutes. But pray often. Align your will to God's and just seal yourself off for just a little while from all the demands and everything that's coming your way. Pray often. Position your heart. Here, let me back up just a little. No? We're missing one. Where is it? Ah, there it is. It's out of place. Practice gratitude. Practice gratitude. In the prayer at the beginning, Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Be thankful. give a running account of the things that you're thankful for. And I know there's certain seasons where that's easier than others. If you're going through something really hard right now, you may be like, I can come up with one thing that I can be thankful for. Then you're thankful for that one thing. Most of us, if we really apply ourselves, can come up with a list of 10 to 20 things that we're grateful to God for, whether it's his character and who he is or what he has done for us or the situation that you're currently in. Practice gratitude on a regular basis. Then I'll say this, position your heart. In other words, fill your heart with the right things, because where you dwell will begin to dwell in you. Proverbs 4:23 says, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. You protect what you put in your heart and your mind. Don't just let anything in. Focus on what is true and noble and right. In Matthew 12:34 says, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart, whatever it is that you're filling your heart with. Don't be fooled. It's not like you can do that all week long and then come to church and get it out. It's going to stick with you. Focus on whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right. Let that dwell in you. And let joy be the outcome of that dwelling. And if you exude joy, this world needs joy like nobody's business. I don't come across too many just joyful people. But if you can fix your mind and dwell with God in the right places, joy will come out. I was tested this week on this concept. I'm going to stop teaching, because every time I teach, God says, hey, let me give you an illustration. And I'm like, no, I don't really want one. That's fine. Like, I'll just read, you know, somewhere and come up with one. But something happened with us this past week. My wife, who is a school teacher, was hanging some stuff on her wall. And as she was coming down off of the counter, her foot goes back on the stool flips, and then she goes straight down the ground, and it cracks her heel, cracks it, fractures it all the way around. I know, some of you are like, I've been there, right? So fractures her heel, and she just goes down, right? And we get to the urgency care place, and they proceed to tell us that they see a lot of teachers in there. I don't know what that's all about, but teachers, beware. This is like also a public service announcement along with like things to be grateful for. So she goes down, and it's just bad. And I go to urgent care, and she's sitting there, and she's just in pain. I could tell, and I'm just like, oh gosh, this sucks. Immediately, all I start thinking about is how this is going to affect our life, right? I'm that guy. I'm sorry. You know, I was comforting. I was nice. Like, I was sweet. But in the back of my mind, I'm going, okay, and then who's going to drive you to work, and how the kid's going to, you know, all these things. So I'm going through this list, like, in my mind, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I can't believe this is happening right now. Her kids are coming next week. And I'm just like, oh, how is she going to get ready for, right? And I stop, and then I remember I'm doing a message on Sunday on my attitude. Maybe I should work on it just a little bit. So just a little. And so I'm like, okay, all right. So I'm glad you weren't hurt any worse than you were, because really it was just her heel. It's not her arm. It's not her head. She didn't fall and get hurt any worse. So like, I'm super thankful that it was just your heel. And the work thing, you don't need to worry about it. It's going to be okay. Like, we'll work around it. This is just a thing. It's for a season, right? It's just for a period of time. It's going to be okay. It's not a big deal. I'll drive you to work. I know it's your driving foot. It's your driving foot. So I'll drive you to work. Don't worry. We'll spend time in the car as a family, right? Like, just keep on the bright side, right? Okay. I'm going to drive in for 10 weeks, the family in the car together. I can do it. It's good. And so I'm like, okay, well, we can spend time together. This is time that we can spend as a family. And like, I'll drive. You don't need to worry about it. And we'll work on the foot thing. It's good that it's not something else. And it could have been a lot worse. And by the end of it, even though it was stressful, man, we were just in a much better place, thanking God that it wasn't any worse than it was. But man, our mindset was different. Our approach to the whole thing was different. And the deal is, I'm not saying that, look at me, I did it great. No, I screwed it up, like all over the place up front. But here's the deal. Whatever comes your way, the places where you dwell will come to dwell in you. So be careful where you dwell. Dwell in places of joy. Dwell in places of truth and nobility, dignity and respect. Dwell in places that are lovely. If there's anything admirable or excellent or praiseworthy, dwell, meditate, spend time there, and God will transform your attitude. Let me pray for us. God, thank you for today. Thank you just for just the reminder that we are living in a world that it's difficult to have a good attitude, much less a joyful attitude. God, every day we're barraged with negativity and criticism and ugliness. And God, I just pray that it would stop with the people in this room. Lord, that we could go to you in prayer, that we could meditate on truth, that we could meditate on what is lovely about you and know that the world that you came to save needs joy. God, help us to be a joyful people. Help us to be a lovely people. Help us to be pure and noble and people of truth, God. We love you. Thank you for your son, Jesus Christ. It's in his name we pray. Amen. You guys are dismissed. Have a great week.